Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics. This is Episode 5, recorded January 29th, 2009.
Hello, everybody!
Well, Kelly, today we're going to talk about something that I like to talk about.
We never do that.
Oh, come on. Today, well, let me ask you a question, okay?
Okay.
A lot of people think breeding fish would be pretty cool.
Uh-huh.
But what would you do if you had 400 zebra danios?
Run out of space very quickly.
Exactly. And that goes the same for a lot of baby fish. Many fish produce outrageous numbers of offspring, and you need to be able to do something with them. If you want to breed them, you often run out of space unless you have a lot of big tanks. And that's fine if you do. It's great if you have the space for them. And then there's the other question. Well, if you breed zebra danios and say you end up with 400 fry and you want to keep them indefinitely and you have the space for it, that's great. But what if you don't? And you don't have a pet store or, you know, some other place where these fish can live out long and happy lives. Well, this is kind of a solution for those of you who might want to breed something, fish, for curiosity's sake. You're not trying to mass produce them. You don't want a huge number of fish.
You just want to have the experience of watching them grow and,
right,
you know, maybe science projects, show your kids.
Right. There's all sorts of reasons why you might want to breed fish like that on a small scale. And you don't want to do it on a large scale. And here's kind of a suggestion on how to do that. That's basically what today's podcast is about.
Okay.
So, let's say, well, I should tell you how I first started out with egg layers. Now, we're talking about egg layers here. Live bearers are a whole different thing. Live bearers are hard to prevent from breeding, of course. And don't take any particular skill beyond the very basics. And I'm not saying it's not fun. I'm not saying it's not worthwhile. I do it myself. I have a tank full of guppies that have been going for years, and with the introduction of new blood once in a while. But I'm not saying that's not worthwhile. But what I'm saying is, if you want to try breeding some egg scatterers specifically, because this technique works specifically for the egg scatterers, this is what you might do. First of all, you need a small tank, anywhere from maybe 2 to 10 gallons.
So very small.
Very small. I've even done it with smaller tanks. I've done it with tanks that are about 1 1/4 gallon capacity, something like that. And you need some filtration. The ones that I've used are sponge filtration and undergravel filtration.
Mm-hmm.
So it does need to be a tank that can accommodate one of those two. And most tanks do. Sponge filtration is very easy to accommodate, so that might be the easiest way to go, but it works with undergravel filtration as well. And I've used that. And you'll need to make sure, of course, that with a tank that small, heating, if it's on the really small side, heating might be an issue. So try to do it in a season when there's not, in a place in your house where it's not going to undergo huge temperature fluctuations. And then you'll need to put some plants in. I recommend, of course, the old favorites Java moss and Java fern, and plant the tank fairly heavily with both. You can also add some water sprite, some hornwort or something else, you know, things like that.
The plants, is that for the babies after the babies are hatched to hide in? And
that's one of the purposes of the plants. There's several. Of course, one is to maintain water quality because the plants, mm-hmm, will absorb some of the waste from the fish. Another is to provide a hiding place, and another is to provide a food source, because indirectly for the baby fish, because especially things like Java moss, plants that have a very high surface area ratio, they accommodate lots of wee creatures, protozoans and rotifers and things that are really small and will hide out on those leaves and proliferate on the leaves, and then the baby fish can eat them.
Okay.
So several reasons for those plants. And also a place for the eggs to fall into and be not so visible to the adults, which is important in some cases. Okay? The two species I recommend for this, and there are other species you could try too, depending on the hardness of your water and so on, but for just about any reasonable water conditions, zebra danios are great, or other similar danios will work too, or white cloud mountain minnows. They're both great. The first time I did this, I actually did it by accident. That should indicate how easy it was. When I was younger, I might have been about 12 or 13 years old, and I had quite an assemblage of creatures of various sorts in my room, and it was not uncommon for neighborhood kids to come over and tour the menagerie that I had in my room. And I had one, such a small tank, it was about a gallon and a quarter, that was the home of a lot of Java moss. And I had recently, maybe a week before, something like that, removed some fish from other tanks and placed them temporarily into that tank. And then after I had performed whatever maintenance I was performing on those other tanks, I'd replaced the adult fish. I remember that I had put some neon tetras in there and some zebra danios and maybe some other fish as well, just for a short period of time. At any rate, as one of the neighborhood kids was touring the facilities, he said, "What are these in here?" And I said, "What do you mean? There's nothing in there. I just got some moss in there." And he said, No, there's little things swimming all over." I said, "Oh, what is that?" And I came closer and noticed that there was a little cloud of fry, maybe 25, 30 fry, very, very small fry, free swimming. They were all just kind of milling around in there. And I said, I'm not sure. And I thought back to what I had done and realized I didn't know what species they were. And it took, it was about a month or two before I realized what they were, when they got big enough to distinguish that they were actually zebra danios. So it is pretty easy to do, but basically you get the plants in there, and you need to make sure that this small aquarium is cycled before you put the fish in. And then I recommend either a pair or a trio into the tank.
A trio being two females and one male?
Usually one female and two males.
One female and two
males. You know, there's a little flexibility in there. Okay. A pair is fine too. That works just pretty well. Because, once again, you're not going for volume and maximum efficiency here.
Mm-hmm.
So you just need a few of the eggs to be fertilized and not to be eaten. Generally, this is what I would do. I'd condition the fish for maybe a week before, feed them well with, you know, some live foods, good quality flake food or frozen food and so on. Those things, before you put them into there. It does help if you separate males and females for a week beforehand, but it's really not necessary. This works really pretty well, even if you don't do that. You put them into the small tank and feed them fairly lightly, but live food's preferable in that case. And let them stay in that small tank for about a week. Then take them out, put them back into whatever tank they normally live in, and then just wait and watch. And within a couple of days, you should see teeny sliver-like fry attached to the glass in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly easy to recognize. They do look like little slivers with eyes at one end. So sometimes, depending on how the light hits them, they might look like they're made of glass or different materials, but they're often fairly iridescent. So they'll be sitting there on the glass. And I've noticed that if you do this method in a fairly small tank, you might end up with 15, 20 fry, something like that, 25. And in a larger tank, you might end up with more. Depends partly on how thick the plant cover is and so on. With white clouds, actually, you don't even need to take out the parents. If there are no predators, no snails, no other fish in there, you can leave white clouds in that tank and they will generally leave most of the fry.
So white clouds don't usually eat their own eggs?
They usually don't eat their own eggs or fry. At least if they do, they don't eat them in large enough numbers that they're all eradicated. Fairly recently, I put, I think, 4 white clouds in a 10-gallon tank and just left them in there. And every few days, there were more fry and more fry until I got up to about 50. And I said, okay, that's enough, and I took the parents out. So it works fairly well with them. Zebra danios, on the other hand, will eat most of their eggs. So you will get some this way, a smaller number. And you do need to take the parents out because they will eat fry as they hatch if they haven't already eaten the eggs, which they probably will do. Eat a fair amount of them. At any rate, you'll have the fry. Now, before you have even put the parents in, you should start thinking about ways to feed these baby fish. Now, one of the fairly effective ways to feed the baby fish is with an infusoria culture. So, about the time you put the parents in the tank, if you take a clean glass jar with no soap residue in it and put some crushed lettuce leaves or a handful of hay or something like that,
Some form of
some form
greens.
of greens, non-toxic greens, obviously, any kind of,
Organic, no pesticides.
right, organic, no pesticides is best. But lettuce leaves are fine. They work fairly well. Put them into the jar. Pour some really hot, even boiling water onto it. About half, fill the container about half full with that boiling water. Let the boiling water cool completely, and then fill the jar the rest of the way with aquarium water from an established tank. If you do that, and you put it in a sunny window, after a few days, little creatures will be swarming around in there. There will be protozoans, perhaps some rotifers and things like that, all kinds of creatures. Basically, that are feeding on the bacteria that are feeding on the remains of the lettuce leaves. Or
Can you expect some kind of color change in the water to indicate this, or you just see the
you
little teeny
can.
things swimming
It
around?
often gets a bit cloudy, the water does. And if you have good eyes, especially if you use a magnifying glass, when it's in the bright light, when the sun's shining on the jar, you can see small shapes swimming around. And if you can see that, you can use an eyedropper to remove some of that, or turkey baste or something like that, and feed that to the fry once they're free swimming. That's one food source.
Now, do they need to eat before they're free swimming when they're
No.
just hanging on the glass?
No, when they're hanging on the glass, they're subsisting on their yolk sacs,
Okay.
even if they're not particularly visible. That's what they're living on. Once they start swimming all the time, now they will take little darting movements around the tank before they're free swimming. They can swim a little bit. But once they're suspended in the water column and moving up and down and swimming much in the same way that adult fish do, then it's time to feed them, and the key is a little and often. So several dropperfuls or even turkey basterfuls of this infusoria culture, as long as it's producing these wee creatures, is great for them, and they need that several times a day,
Now,
ideally.
that's going to go through the water and the infusoria culture kind of quickly. Do you just add more fish tank water or more hot
First,
water or?
you can add more aquarium water or just clean dechlorinated water for a
Does it need to
while.
be hot again?
No, it doesn't. Eventually, we will deplete the nutrients that came from the lettuce, and then you'll need to start over. It's a good idea, actually, to stagger the culture. So make a culture, about a week later, make another one, and so on. And then as one gets rank and stops producing, it'll start to smell and everything. Even a good culture will have an odor to it, but once it's not producing so much, you dump that one out and start over again. But the good news is the infusoria culture doesn't need to be the main source of food for very long. Maybe about a week, maybe two, depending
Okay.
on how things go. And then you can move to some other kind of food. But another food as an alternative, you can use this. This is a very old type of food that you can use for baby fish, but it works fairly well. I've used it several times. You just boil an egg, chicken egg, take the yolk, and then you strain a small portion of the yolk through a brine shrimp net or some a woman's stocking, something like that, and it comes out in kind of a fine suspension in the water. You can do that with very small amounts of this. The fish will eat that, especially if it's a good quality egg, like one that's been raised on foods that help it have a lot of omega-3s and so on in it. That should help the fish to grow a little better. And it's a pretty good protein source, so the fish can survive on that. It does pollute the water more quickly than infusoria, so that's something to be aware of. But either one of those. You can also try some of the prepared liquid fry foods on the market, which may or may not actually provide direct nutrition to the fish, but either way, they do provide some nutrition in the form of food for infusoria already in the tank that will proliferate and then provide
So it's
food for
kind
the
of like
fish
making an infusoria culture already just in your fish
in your
tank.
tank. And the fish may derive some nutrition from the actual food. It's kind of up for debate, but either way, it seems to work somewhat. Although I've had better results with the previous two methods of feeding the fish, I must say, than I have with the prepared liquid fry foods. I've only tried one or two types, though. So we'll see. You can try that out as you wish. But after you've fed the baby fish for about a week on that, then you can start introducing other foods. A great food to start with is vinegar eels. Mm-hmm. You can try with a small amount of vinegar eels and see the podcast on vinegar eels for how to culture those.
So those are the really pretty small.
Yeah, they're the smallest nematode that's commonly cultured in aquaria, or at least one of the smallest. It's smaller than microworms or waltworms. And you can actually watch their bellies expand if they're actually eating the vinegar eels. You can put some in, and a couple of moments later you can see their stomach start to expand on that, and they'll turn the color that the vinegar eels are, and then you'll know they're eating it. If they're not doing that, they're not ready for the vinegar eels, and you'll need to go back to something smaller like the egg yolk suspension or the infusoria for a few more days. Once they start taking vinegar eels, though, then you can introduce microworms and or waltworms maybe 3 or 4 days later.
Okay.
And you don't have to stop the infusoria or the egg yolk necessarily while you're doing the vinegar eels, but vinegar eels do make a good bridge, but you don't want to feed them for more than a few days, and then go on to microworms and or
waltworms. Why don't you want to feed them for more than a few days?
Vinegar eels are not as nutritionally complete as some of the other foods, and so they won't do well. The fish will not do well if they fed exclusively vinegar eels.
So only for a few days to bridge the size gap.
Right. But microworms and waltworms, on the other hand, they'll do quite well on those. And one of the best foods is newly hatched brine shrimp. If they've been on microworms and waltworms for a few days, they can usually take newly hatched brine shrimp. And once they're doing that, and you can begin to introduce also finely ground flake food and so on to their diet. So by doing this, just watching their little bellies to make sure they're actually eating, and you can usually use look carefully and watch them and see whether they're ingesting the food, you can get them up to a size in just a few weeks where they'll be big enough that you can take them out of this small tank if the tank is too small. You know, you don't want to keep them in a 1 1/4 gallon tank for very long. Mm-hmm. But if you only have 15 fry, you could keep them in there for several weeks. And by the end of those several weeks, if you're feeding them well and you're giving regular water changes, they should be big enough that you can put them back in with the adults after just a few weeks. And that's another good reason for this, if not just to just see the experience or have the experience of raising the fry, but if you have a few zebra danios, for example, and you want a large school, or white clouds, you want a large school in a large tank that looks pretty spectacular that way. It's a lot more interesting than 4 or 5 fish. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, create your own school that way fairly inexpensively. One thing that I alluded to but I need to stress is that water changes are very important. The smaller the tank, the more important, but every tank needs regular water changes, and in fry tanks this is especially important to do frequent water changes. It's not too much to do 20% of the water every day. If you want the fry to grow quickly, water changes are the key. Well, one of the most important keys. The other one is frequent small feedings. Basically, ideally, the fry should be eating small quantities all day.
So every time you walk by the tank.
Well,
or more.
The problem is, with foods like egg yolk, you can't really do that because it will pollute the water really quickly. Mm-hmm. With infusoria, it's a little more possible because you just introduce a few drops at a time, and you could actually do that. Some people even set up a drip system. Mm-hmm. They set up a siphon from the infusoria culture directly into the tank and then tie a loose knot in the airline tubing that they set the siphon up with so that it's dripping slowly into the tank. That's a feasible way to feed them because it's going to be kind of time release, fairly slow but constant. But once again, the egg yolk would be too much of a pollutant in the water if you were to do that. But you should feed at least several times a day, 3 times a day, if not more, just a very small amount at one time. One thing you can do to help keep the egg yolk cleaned up is to put once the eggs have hatched, not before, once the eggs have hatched, you can introduce some snails. Some ram's horn snails are a good choice because they will not harm fry, but they will eat, kind of mop up that excess egg yolk.
Okay.
So that's a good way to do that. Snails that are in a fry tank before the fry have actually hatched are a danger to the eggs. They will eat the eggs.
Now, backing up a little bit, when you're talking about water changes nearly every day,
mm-hmm.
Is it a problem when the fry are so teeny and small to try to use a gravel vacuum to siphon out the water with? Is it going to suck up the fry?
It can. So you do have to be quite careful about that. There are a couple of things you can do to help avoid sucking up the fry. One is to just use an airline tubing. And
Instead of a big
instead of a
plastic
big
gravel vac.
barge bore hose or gravel vac, right? And just keep your finger near the other end, and if you accidentally suck up one little fry, then plug it and hold it up and release the fry back into the tank and then start over again. You can do that. You can also put a sponge over a larger bore hose, like some open cell foam. Cut a hole in the open cell foam, insert the hose into there, and vacuum it slowly through there, and that will make it possible to do it without sucking up fry. But in any case, you should be careful not to suck up fry. You can often damage them. They're quite sensitive when they're that small. But otherwise, you should be fine. As long as you're doing the frequent partial water changes, feeding regularly, you'll get some fry. And like I said, with this method, I've obtained anywhere from 15 to 50 fry, and it's a great way to have the experience of raising egg-laying fish, egg scatterers specifically, and without producing such a large number that you can't find homes for them. So have fun.
Okay. Take pictures every day because they change really fast.
They do. It's amazing. And like I said, if you have kids or something that want to experience this process, it's great. Great fun. So enjoy.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the AquariMax audio show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and/or questions, please email us at info@aquarimax.com.